So.
Hi, good morning, folks. Thank you for joining us for the Tehama Groundwater Demand Management Working Group meeting. Just going to pull this up here. Let's see, I'm just waiting to see if anyone starts joining us online. No one yet. But let's still go do our regular round robin introductions for folks. I'm Stephanie Borey with the Consensus Building Institute, facilitating today's meeting, and we'll go around the room or for folks online. So Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, Jasmine Jensen, Deputy Director of Public Works Water Resources.
Steve Grunewald, grower.
Adam Engelhardt, grower, Groundwater Commission.
I'm Michael Ward, Groundwater Commission.
Todd Amo, Commission.
Ian Turnbull, the Bay Area.
Bill Moore, a grower from the Metropolis of Tehama.
And Joe online.
Joe Hughes, attorney and chief drafter for right now.
Perfect. And just going through the participation procedures. Joe, you've kind of seen all this, so I'm not kind of bothering with sharing the screen. But again, the participation procedures. Morning, Liz. So Liz just joined us. Liz Mary with the Groundwater Commission. And again, this group, the goal is to find areas of agreement as much as possible. So, but we are consensus speaking. That said, we do not have to force ourselves to reach agreement. The point is to make sure that we're getting an understanding of your different perspectives. Since we are online and for members of the public, they're calling to listen in. The main thing, logistically is please just make sure only one voice at a time and keep side conversations to an absolute minimum, meaning zero, please. All right. Usually we do a recap of our last meeting, which was only last week. So only so much was accomplished in that time. Last meeting was to review Joe's first round of revising the alternative proposal. So this group was able to share their feedback on that one. And we kind of identified a bit of like what's the near-term timeline there. In that time, you know, CBI, we compiled, we did like a rough draft notes of what that feedback was to give to the offer Joe. Joe revised that and got that version two. We got that up to you yesterday. And CBI and staff are scheduling a meeting with LSCE to kind of be thinking through working out some of the information needs and what is a reasonable expectation of when information might be available, kind of thinking for the longer timeline for the demand management program. For today, it's kind of similar as what last week was, where since Joe has provided conducted these edits on for version two, that we'll give Joe some time to explain kind of the key changes on that. We only have Joe until till 10 o'clock, so I'm going to ask that folks focus on, you know, the key pieces of feedback and issues, language and wordsmithing edits. Ask that folks send us to us via email. Brendan was a great example of reminding that would like the terms defined, having a section on that one. And then after Joe leaves, we can spend some time to think through. We have this April 23rd board meeting milestone, and so preparing for that piece. So that is morning, Hal Crane with the commission has also just ended. So we are good to go with everyone we're expecting. Any questions on the game plan for today? Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Joe now. Again, the main thing for this one is looking over the revised alternative proposal that Joe created. The key question is same as last time, though. What elements feel like they're going in the right direction? What needs significant work already, or raises key concerns for you? Again, please hold, send your language edits via email. So with that, actually, we turn it over to Bill. All right, guys.
Okay. Thank you, Stephanie. And I just started the screen sharing. I can't really see that screen up there. Do you see the document?
Yes, you're seeing the document.
Perfect. Okay. So this is the redlined PDF version that that I have up on the screen right now. And so as Stephanie said, I wasn't thinking of going line by line, but just hitting the high points. I think it worked well last time as I walked through this for folks to shout out questions or comments. I think that was a good way to work through the document. So, if it's okay with you, I would say let's continue to do that this time as well. There we go. Okay. And then just so everybody is on the same page, what I did to create, this document is I accepted all of the redlining from the last one, and that was in what you were given last time was a red line and then a clean version. And then I started with that clean version and then I redlined everything that came out of the notes from the last meeting. That's usually my practice. So we just continue to build and don't red line over red line over red line because that gets super confusing. Okay, so there are just
Hey
some.
Joe,
Yes.
I just have a general question, and it's not specific to anything in the document, but in the first section of 1.1, we talk about the rezos. But one of the things I'm trying to understand, and I don't have a handle on, is we reference the district, and we reference the GSA, and we know they're one and the same. But I'm wondering, at what point is there a distinction to be made in this document where we reference the GSA instead of the district, or vice versa? The other thing too is
Really,
that they have different authorities, and I'm wondering, is that a consideration
yes.
here?
Really good question, and I'm kind of chuckling to myself because this is something that I have worked through and with, geez, for the last decade, right? Because, a lot of the agencies, the GSAs that I've worked with, are not joint. Some of them are districts that then elected to become GSAs, and that tees up this particular issue. And then some are GSAs that are joint powers authorities that are a collection of agencies. So when it's the latter, right, it's a joint powers authority, it's very clear that it's just the GSA. And when it's the former and it's a district that's just a district and it is the GSA, but it's only one district acting as a GSA, there's always this metaphysical, all right, are you exercising that authority as a water district, for example, or as the GSA? It's a really, really good point. What I need to do, and I'll make a note here because what I will do is go through and comb through the document and really make sure that we're not attributing something to the district, which really should be attributed to the GSA, which is the district wearing its GSA hat. I will not take you down the rabbit hole of what it is to be a GSA and if it's really a separate entity and there's a case on that now. I will not take you down that rabbit hole. Suffice to say that it is a good issue and I'll make a note to comb through this because we really should be specific that is the district in its role as the GSA. And when we say GSA, we really mean the GSA, which in a way, I suppose that I'm saying all that touches on Brendan's comment about having a terminology section and drafting out loud. I suppose I could say GSA means the district in its capacity as the GSA, and then that would nail it. So very, that's my answer. Good point. I will comb through the document as part of my usual cleanup process and hit all those the best I can. You also, since we're in 1.1, again, some when you're drafting these things, it's kind of like, my shop teacher in junior high said, you start off with the rough edges, and then you just start getting finer and finer sandpaper and you really start smoothing it out. Drafting in my mind is kind of the same way. You kind of get the big stuff and then you start whittling it down and you make notes like we just did about some real fine points. A fine point in my mind, I've got a note in my own mind on this, is we've got these two resolutions. I didn't go back and look at both of them. I will tell you, I think that there's some sloppiness on my part in the drafting where I say the resolutions, plural, say whatever. I've made a note in my mind. I really need to go back and we really want to get fancy about it. We may define these two resolutions differently because we've got two resolutions and we can generically say they do X, but there are some places in here where it's pretty particular what the resolution does, and it may just be too loose to say that the resolutions plural do that particular thing. So just calling that out in advance that the resolutions are defined, plurally there. I may want to actually look at the resolutions and be more specific because I'm kind of using them pretty loose down below, if that makes sense. But that kind of goes in the same bucket of I'll comb through and clean up some of that as we
Hey, Joe, this is Steve. Do we need to keep them both? Are we still playing with two different resolutions?
They're really close. I don't know. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, they're two different resolutions.
Okay.
One that's specific to corning and one that's specific to the remainder. And that's because we passed them as an individual and then we agreed on what the resolutions would look like. The language in the resolutions would look like for corning between us. So we have a resolution for corning and then CSGSA has a resolution for corning. And so we kind of there could be some slightly different verbiage in there, but they are really similar.
And the timelines are good.
There's some timeline stuff.
A year for.
Yep,
that's right.
that's the biggest difference. And then there's a couple of little minor detail stuff that you might find in there.
And I may lean on you, Justin, to help, sort through that. Again, at the end of the day, it doesn't materially change the substance of what we're doing here, but it is one of those things. You got to be specific. You want to be accurate. And, sometimes there are unintended consequences of loose drafting. So, but that's good questions. And we'll get to the bottom of that as we really refine this.
I have a question on 1.3, and it's the resolution reference, I'm a little, I guess, unclear whether we're going to what the role of the resolution is when we were looking at this document as not a reso, but at our last meeting. That was my takeaway, that this would not become a resolution. This is just a demand management framework. So are we talking about a new reso, to adopt this plan, or what's the reference for that now?
Yeah, good point. So here, as I'm reading this now, frankly, in the 1.3, this first sentence, the resolution, which again is singular, which we don't have a defined singular resolution, specifies that the program will consist. Frankly, as I sit here right now, I'd edit that to say the program will consist of two categories, right? I think there was a time when I was calling back, I was referring back to the resolution. But the way I'm approaching this is this resolution is going to stand on its own. And so I delete, what I just highlighted there, I delete that and just say the program will consist of two categories of measures. And then away
Okay.
we go.
Yeah. And yes, I foresee, and I'm assuming you would agree with this, Joe, that we will end up adopting this with via a resolution of the board.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that's right. But to the point that was raised, though, this is not, it just, you wouldn't refer to that resolution in the program document, right? The program document is the program document, and then you have a resolution approving it. You wouldn't say in the program document some reference to the resolution adopting it. That makes sense.
And there may be reference to a resolution later in the document. I don't see. Might do a search on that. See.
I will. Yeah, I will. I will. And I do appreciate you all, like Brendan's comment this morning. There's things that you, okay, well, I'll get to it. Hitting the big stuff first, and as we refine it, it's kind of cool because it means you're getting past some of the big issues and you're resolving the big stuff, and we're getting down to the stuff that, okay, we want to make sure this is a clean document. So So under phase two here, the second bullet point, this was a discussion from last time, that phase two will consist of mandatory measures, which may include allocations. And this was the wordsmithing, if you will, of, look, there will be mandatory. That's mandatory. Then the rest are the actual measures, which are the allocations, restrictions, et cetera. That's a list. That's a list, and it may include those, but we're not trying to tell us anyone now that those have to be the measures taken. We just are saying that there will be mandatory measures. I know we had some discussion on that last time.
Yeah, no, thank you.
And then the commensurate with issues, there was the comment last time about, well, what really is that? And so I added a definition to make it clear as to what that, call it a term of art now, what that means. And then 1.5 terminology. I really did kind of chuckle when I saw, not at Brendan, but I chuckled when I saw it because he caught me. He busted me. I really did. I was starting to break out the terminology, and then I just thought, oh, okay, there's a lot of stuff. Even just, what is an MO? If we're going to use MO, just again, just the simple stuff. And I just didn't have time, and so I really did just punt on that. I should have noted it so no one thought that this would necessarily be my final answer. So this terminology section, if unless but we can absolutely talk about it, what I would say that 1.5 is still under construction, and I would have an A, B, C, D, whatever, and I would have, what is a polygon, what is an RMS, and we define that. MO is, minimum threat, minimum MT is minimum threshold. I put all of the definitions in here, because, as we all know, that's important.
About a glossary section to
Yeah, we could do
construct.
that too. Yeah, you're right. And if it becomes unwieldy, I will do that too and make that an appendix. So we got rid of appendix A and B. Maybe we just have an appendix and say, here, that will be the glossary, and we'll kick it over there so it doesn't clutter up the document.
Right.
This is not some 20-page purchase and sale agreement that, we want this thing to be usable. And that's the problem with cluttering it up. So, bottom line is, we'll say terminology is under construction, whether it's here or in an appendix. But we'll, and I do, before I move on the terminology, I also know, it's one thing to define what sigma means, right? That's pretty simple. There are other things that, you can have some arm wrestling over. How do you define a certain thing? Because that can be material, beyond just using a shorthand for a particular idea. It becomes how you define it. That can be important. But in any event, let's say 1.5 is under construction. Think two is just some wordsmithing. Scroll down, and then here, just because framework, I wanted to use framework sparingly because the term framework really applies to this program document. So that was just wordsmithing cleanup stuff. 2.2, again, more cleanup stuff. So now under 2.2 here, and I'll stop here. 2.2, second bullet point. This was a conversation we had last time about we shouldn't have, four different CNE plans. It can be countywide in structure with sub-basin specific or area specific outreach components. So this was responsive to part of the to a comment and discussion last time.
I just had a comment on number one on this page, and
Okay.
it was three with identify stakeholder groups. The only thing I'd like to do is strike what you put in parentheses, if any choose to participate, implies something, I don't know what, and it's not necessary.
Okay.
There's a, just so you know, Joe, we do actually have this same thing in some of our other documents. And that's because if you remember way, way back in Sigma, we were required to notify tribes and request if they see if they wanted to participate. And we actually got letters back from some that said no. And so I think that that's what this kind of thing is a reference to. We might need to keep it.
Just
as a discussion point, Joe. Because we actually do have some letters from tribes that say they do not want to be participating.
I think tribes, regardless, should be kept in the loop no matter what. If they choose not to participate, great. Yeah, but if we're doing public outreach, whether they chose not to participate or not, they need to be kept in the loop. I think it's just a courtesy.
Ultimately, though, it's their decision whether or not they want to be kept in the loop. You can't force them to do anything.
Sure.
We don't.
I can hear me.
Okay,
yes,
we can.
All right, I'll point that as a concern, Michael.
There's something about what I'm talking about. I don't have a preference per se, but that has happened that way in the past, so we might want to keep it consistent.
I'll flag that as a follow up. But thanks.
Okay.
No caller.
That's so there we go. Get all these on the same page here. It's including ongoing phase. Some wordsmithing and then some responsiveness to, for 4, 5, and 6 here. And 6 was, we had some discussion last time about, the response to comments, what does that look like? So for purposes of trying to be somewhat specific here and making sure that, we don't want to tie our hands as to what the, response to comments table may look like, but at least identify that or acknowledge that something needs to be put together.
I appreciate that. Stephanie, I think we do a really good, have done a really good job along those lines. Would you agree? And what you brought to the table so far, Do you think that's what we're talking about here?
I'm gonna flag that as I think that's a good conversation for this group to explore, because I think that that process can range widely. So depending on what your goal is, so let's flag. I think that's already kind of flagged as a topic for future discussion, but it definitely needs to be fleshed out a bit more. So I think does this look good? Does this language look good enough for the framework document, folks?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Point 3 here, just some wordsmithing, but also, continuing to make clear that the phase 1 voluntary measures may be initiated, approved, and implemented while the outreach milestones are being completed. Let's see, next thing, so I can get all of this on one page. One, there we go. I'll stop here and let you read this. Do some wordsmithing. Oops, there we go. And some of this, the language that I added here below E, just to concluding, section 2.3, some of this stuff is, it's not necessarily to bind anybody in the future, but as we're thinking about it, you just want to get it down on paper so we know that we thought about it, and it's not, again, not to tie anybody's hands, but just to acknowledge that this is what we think the process should look like. 2.4, and then Stephanie, you mean, which flag this one too, kind of the same thing, kind of what's the comment log going to look like? So it appears down here is what I'm trying to say as well.
Just a question for Justin on 2.5 requirements. So I'm looking at that first sentence, Justin. So no phase two allocations, restrictions, or regulatory or related regulatory ordinances will be adopted until basically we have this community outreach plan in place. Do you see that is a problem? I mean, do we see any regulatory ordinances coming down in the real near term?
So one thing, the only thing that I will say is this statement that is, it's sort of patent, right? It says will not, right? We do have some other language that says, hey, conditions warrant some of this, right? And there could be a scenario by which we have not yet adopted a CED plan for some reason, but conditions warrant action, and those two things then would oppose each other. It's something to think about. It may or may not end up being an issue in any way, but it is a reality. So I don't know if that's a major thing or if there's some wordsmithing there that could sort of make that so they don't conflict each other, but it may not be an issue in the end. I don't know.
And as I remember, there was a caveat in there that if the wheels come off the bus before we finish the
Then we got to
CNE,
do
we
something.
can step in, but that's a board thing, not for us to define it right here and now. I think there was a placeholder for that that was already all in the document.
Yeah, certainly we're talking about it.
Yeah, I think
We had some, and I remember reading some reference to it. I just don't know that the language matches between each other. We just might have to look at that.
okay. We have 32 minutes.
So Joe, can we just flag that as a let's double check? Because I mean, ultimately, this group just wants to be able to be responsive, and really things really hit the fan that we can be the board can be responsive to that. So just again,
Right.
a double check to see if the document language and other sections are aligned to that.
Right. And in drafting these things, you don't want to inadvertently create a gate, so to speak, where, other things can't happen until X happens and X is going to get bogged down, right? And you're like, wait a minute, we tied our hands on this by creating this gate. So some wordsmithing here.
Just going to suggest that we need to strike that 3.2 heading.
Oh, geez. Yeah, okay.
All right, we are starting to veer into language edits, so I'm going to ask Joe to keep pressing along. We're at 9:30 already.
Good. I'm looking at the rest of 3.2 there, so I'll have additional time.
You know what? Okay.
Did you have something on 3.2?
No, I have a question on item four, on section four.
Okay, let's get down there. Okay, shoot. Okay.
Oh, I do shoot me.
Yeah, fire away.
It was G, item G. So fouling not associated with groundwater substitution transfers. And that, so what we're saying here is this is a phase one measure, which is incentivized, and we would not incentivize fouling. What does that say? Fouling unassociated. We would incentivize fouling that's not associated with groundwater substitution transfers. I'm just not sure what the implications are.
Since this is part of the resolution, by the way, this is the thing. I'll just
It's
answer
a
that
not,
really
it's
quickly.
the groundwater substitution transfer is what throws it off for me a little bit.
Yeah, it's just so it's fallowing, not about water grading, not associated with water grading.
Just flat out
Just
fallowing,
leaving
right?
it dry. So just, hey, dry, we're gonna leave this ground dry. It's not associated with water grading because that is an entirely
You're not
different.
leaving it dry because you're water trading. That's the cause for the fallowing. Just flat out fallowing.
See, I thought that would be okay.
Well, in two, water trading is an issue in phase two, though, specifically defined.
Thank you. Never mind.
And then for phase one, I took out the reference to management zone, sustainable yield, and credit system, because again, this applies to phase one. And so then the added language down here obviously got rid of the Appendix A, and you'll see a deleted and then moved some of those concepts up here. And just fleshed out a little bit more what a phase measure would look like, and that they're voluntary and flexible, et cetera. And so this language here under 5.1 now, we already talked about it above. The measures will be mandatory, and then these are, may include all or any of the following.
Hey Joe, it's Hal speaking. For the record, I would like to state that it's my opinion that the trading and market should have the word rather than shall. Or excuse me, may, it should be shall. That's my opinion. I don't think it's necessarily with the appropriate guardrails on that. I'm not sure that it's been necessarily vetted in the group, understanding the massive financial impact of virtually every grower in the area without that.
Got it.
I mean, you're talking about the sentence right under F 5.1. Major types, Lorenzo.
Specifically on water market and trading.
And you're saying that you're suggesting that our phase two measures need to include that?
That shall be a portion of the phase two measures, is what my statement is.
Okay. I disagree, but
And put it on the record.
So I think last time we met, we talked about the permissive, not restrictive nature of may versus shall. And we agreed, I think, that, well, maybe not everyone, but we surmised that we'd have to work on that whole issue, that it deserves a place mark. It's definitely something that will be considered, but we didn't lock ourselves down to it. That was my
And
recollection.
that was the why we have the May is was my recollection.
So possibly for this, maybe if we have time, we can look back on it. For now, I think maybe what we bring back to the commission and to the board is that there were diverse opinions. Some folks wanted to have the shall include to affirm and make sure that this is part of the program, and others wanted to keep it as a may include to allow for some flexibility. So just flagging it as something that there were diverse opinions on that language.
So just to build on that point, had some conversations with some members of the board, and I believe there's an economic analysis, at least the very beginning of one underway right now, the purpose of which to understand the implications of a demand management program in the absence of a trading system. And what I mean by that is, I think it's as Justin's work to communicate these programs, I think, expands throughout the county, it's becoming more and more clear to growers that if they are not able to transfer credits, they are essentially looking at de facto land use restriction and severe devaluation of their properties. For example, if you have an allocation of 2 acre feet, if Bill has an allocation of 2 acre feet, and decides he wants to continue to farm his walnuts by fallowing 100 acres of concrete, 4 acre feet on the walnuts. In the absence of some type of transfer program, he can't do that.
Basically, it's complete devastation instead of you can compartmentalize it. The economic impacts, that's what I'm getting at, are so severe. And all keeping in mind, while the mission needs to be with the guardrails, you can't put water in and antelope and move it to pump at Rancho Tama. Forget about that idea. I don't think anybody here is even contemplating that. But within a specific zone there, If you, in the absence of that, it's a financial devastation. If you demand manage 2 acre feet, the whole zone's dead on permanent crops.
Well,
I don't think that's the spirit of what
we're trying to do. I'm going to pause on this just because it is into a topic that definitely needs or warrants more discussion. But given Joe's time, I'm thinking like definitely put a pin in this. I think we can move back to it actually, maybe after 10 o'clock when Joe has that hard stop. But I think certainly one of the things that you'll be looking for from the commission and the board is some idea with this document, whether or not you want to commit to it. It may include or shall include. That's the specific ask to the board. But definitely this group would want to delve into this topic, especially if you're seeing future information coming down the pike. So I think that's kind of the game plan on that one. I'm going to
10-second recommendation before we go. How about shall consider and may include? That way it forces the consideration of, but doesn't necessarily define it as one specific thing.
I don't mind that. The word may does not exclude anything, though, like exactly how it is.
But it addresses both issues, right?
Right.
We are going to, we are forced to consider it, and I have to, but it may include these items. Just as a sort of mid-road there to talk about.
They all should be discussed, so yes, I like that.
Joe, you have a good clear orders on that one?
I do.
Chugging along then.
Down here in 5.2, you get deletion of the management area, use of that phrase. And then I'm going to use this second bullet point here just as an example of, you know, getting back to Brendan. What it's Brendan's second comment from this morning, determination of how applicable sustainable yield estimates. I'm going to put that on the list of, you know, going through and refining and making sure, really making sure that we're using the sustainable yield, that term really appropriately will likely find its way into the terminology appendix or glossary or whatever we end up using that. So again, because I'm just seeing here redlined in the sustainable yield, need to make sure that we're using that consistently, because it is a term under SGMA that we want to use appropriately. 5.3, again, I took out management areas in the second bullet point and then used the same terminology, same language that I'm using elsewhere for consistency purposes, for completion, for completeness, and also consistency, special zones, polygon groupings, or other appropriate spatial implementation units. Fancy way of saying, you know, areas, but again, understanding that we want to be careful and be consistent.
You know, Joe, I just have, I'm going to, the last bullet on 5.2, and this is just a personal thing, I guess. Processes and timelines for implementing, evaluating, and adopting measures. To me, I want to put a bullet, you know, a period there, but maybe not. Through annual reports and periodic GSP evaluations. You know, I guess I don't have a lot of, I don't place a lot of credence at this point on annual reports. I don't think the DMR guidelines really call for much there. And I know we could really, you know, use that vehicle, you know, for this process. But to me, it's a weak link.
He's just trying to say that we need to do it by GSP updates, not annual reports. I think that that's perfectly fine as a notation to look at.
But I also think it's, I mean, I like the annual. We need an annual evaluation. I just don't know that the annual reports is the way to go, but it certainly could be the vehicle for it. Anyhow, but, you know, as the county has said, and Justin, the annual reports is just a data dump for us. And if it's more than that, great. But that's for all it is at this point.
So I'm hearing, Michael, that you would like the group to consider maybe an annual review.
That would be, yes. Again, you know, the report and report that is critical. I just don't think it.
Program.
I don't think it really does much for us there as far as what should be in an annual report.
I'm going to back to pause and just can Joe, can you just review the key changes that you made? I'm just looking like there's a lot of big substantive stuff coming up, and we have less than 20 minutes with you.
Right.
So
okay.
If folks are okay, I'm going to pull a time process thing of if folks can hold onto their comments for until Joe gets through this last run through, and then we'll open it up.
Good. Let's see. What did I do while you were talking? I sped through 5.3. So at the bottom of 5.3, permanently refined supplement or. And this is an example right here of, you know, I would say this probably should be to the very one of the initial comments. This where it says the district, that should probably say GSA. Oops. Ah, hit the wrong button. Okay. The district letter considers any of that as part of this, which includes eligibility criteria. 5.4, you know, again, just changing, taking out management areas of making it more generic so it doesn't tie back to, you know, a term of art under Sigma.
Going back to 5.3.
Hey, Bill, give us 1 second. Just put a star by it and let's do it when he's done at the end because we're kind of, like, we got to get through it real quick. We only have 10 more minutes with him.
Okay.
So give us one. Give us just a minute.
Okay. 5.4 here, the language just gives some direction. Again, district probably should say GSA may consider groundwater conditions. Just what they're looking at. Just, again, things that should be looked at in terms of identifying, you know, going to use the wrong word, but management area or, you know, areas. This is all wordsmithing. I think this ended up being wordsmithing as well. Again, in this last bullet point, periodic review at the bottom of, I forget what number this is, but periodic review and where appropriate refinement of sustainable yield methodologies, MOs, MTs, trigger criteria, because that ties into something that we talked about. That in advance, you know, the warning signs. Funding, I know we had a big discussion about that last time, so I deleted 7.1 through 7.3. So all that came out. And then I rewrote 7.4, obviously became 7.1. And then I just rewrote it because it was just simpler to do it that way. So let me pause here and see collectively for the fee section, and then specifically 7.1, the new 7.1. What comments or questions, concerns do you have about what I did here, if any?
They didn't have any.
None.
All looks good. It looks like we're good.
Okay. Let's see, so then start date. So this is, I was threading the needle here. So you'll see what I did because the resolutions have the, you know, implementation date. And then I just worked in this as soon as practicable. So this is me being crafty to reflect that there was a January 1, 2026 date, but otherwise starting as soon as practicable.
The one thing on that is that only one of the resolutions had the 2026 date, the other one had the 2027.
Okay, so, okay.
That we'll figure that out when we do the two resolutions differences, Joe.
Yeah. Thank you for calling that out, though. 8.2 is just some wordsmithing. I don't like perpetuity. It just always sounds. Because the board's got the opportunity to change this. And so perpetuity probably was too strong of language. And then the timeline, you know, we talked about this last time, you know, there were the dates, you know, the hard or at least by month or year dates, and that they were down, oops, sorry, to there were there was the timeline in the appendix, and so let me get back up here. Oops, went too far. There we go. Project program timeline. What I did instead of having those hard or somewhat soft dates in that in the appendix A, just did more descriptive as to what the process and the steps will be. And so this was my stab at trying to not tie anyone's hands, but also be fairly specific as to what the steps are going to be and the milestones. So I'm gonna pause here because I want to, this is something obviously that a lot of redlining here, and I want to make sure that if there's additional steps, that's great. But one conceptually, are folks okay with how I handled this?
I think it's really good for now, and it gives us something to talk about. And when after you're off the call, maybe this is something we can focus on.
Okay. And then nine on the program governance. This last the last sentence of section 9.1, addressing the administrative appeal process, hardship provisions. That's again, I was pulling stuff up that I thought was appropriate from Appendix A. When I'm off, and you have your discussion, certainly if there are things in Appendix A that you want, descriptively moved up or however, just flag those, because I can certainly do that. I was just doing my best to identify things, to be consistent with not being duplicative and repetitive, and keeping this flexible, et cetera. But that would be helpful if there are things that you would like moved up into the document. And that last sentence of 9.1 is an example of something that I moved up. And then the environmental review. And this is just kind of wordsmithing. That CEQA is what CEQA is, and you got to do what you got to do. And then we get down to Appendix A, and this is all just redlining. I just got rid of the Appendix A, and that's what that looks like, the balance. So that's it. That's it in terms of the document.
Thanks so much, Joe. So maybe we can look back. Bill, you had something earlier? Do you remember which section that you want? You had an edit for, you had a comment for Joe earlier.
Well, regarding the change from management zones to special zones, special zones. What's the thinking behind changing the language?
Here's an example. Periodic review of any management area. Management area is a term under Sigma. And so I think the idea coming out of last time was to avoid a determination that, yes, there will be a management area. I think that there was also reference in other documents to what was like a focus zone or focus area, something like that. And so really trying to make it as generic as possible for purposes of this program document so that when the implementation of this starts, it can be a management area. It can certainly be that, but be very clear that this is just the concept. So review of polygon grouping, if your use of polygons are used, special zone or other spatial implementation methodology, which I know is a mouthful, but the idea there is it can be whatever in maximum flexibility to the GSA. How do you want to do that? We're not going to say you have to have a management area per se if there's a better way of doing it. Obviously, they've got to comply with Sigma. The point, though, was to avoid using, hey, there will be a management area, because that's a term under Sigma. You can regulate by way of management areas. And for purposes of this program document, we shouldn't make that determination today. That was the idea of that was the reason for moving away from management area, for example. And just the concept is still there, but not using that specific term.
In that section also, where starting the paragraph where spatial boundaries are used, blah, 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 it's an odd sentence. I don't know really. I mean, I can imagine what you're saying, but it might, if it's appropriate, if the sentence might start out in the development of spatial boundaries,
And
blah, blah, blah.
Where are you?
5.3.
Okay, thank you.
Where the paragraph starts, where spatial boundaries are used. I just want it to be an odd sentence. Wasn't quite sure what you were driving at there.
And what were you proposing again, now that I have it in front of me?
And if it's appropriate, it might say in the development of spatial boundaries for monitoring allocations.
Okay.
All right. So I want to ask, we have 9 minutes with Joe. So I want to ask the group, substantively, overall, how does this feel for folks? Is this, with the edits and things that Joe has flagged for some follow-up, the consistency, a term section or glossary, those various things that we already discussed, but substantively, where is this group standing? Does this seem like it's on a good trajectory to bring back to the board on the 23rd? Or are there any key things that you really want to make sure that this group discusses beforehand? This is kind of like the next time you see this document, April 14th, where it's kind of like the near final because the turnaround, we only have like a couple of days to turn it around to include in the board packet. So this is really like the issues you want to discuss with the group.
I'm just in a general sense, I'm really happy with where this is going and what we've got so far.
Hey, Joe, this is Steve. I agree with Michael. I think we're headed in the right direction, and I'm pretty optimistic that we'll have something to send to the commission on time. One of the asks I think that we had last meeting, and this, speaks to the whole transfer and credit issue that we're struggling with a bit, is that you were asked to provide an instance or two where it's working successfully in the state. Have you been able to come up with something for us to chew on for a while between now and the next meeting or not?
No is the short answer. They are out there. So it's not a matter of, hey, the one doesn't exist. What I wanted to do was give you a couple of examples and say, here's what that is. Not spending a ton of time on it, but say, hey, here's what it is, say out in Antelope Valley, here's how they do it. Just with nothing more than some bullet points. I'll get that out before the next meeting. And I think this is going to be a fairly quick turnaround on this particular, on this document. And so I can include those at the same time and, several days in advance of our next meeting so that, why don't we do this by the end of the week, I'll get this turned around and then get you those examples. So you've got the weekend and then the first part of next week to take a look at, and then we can talk about it.
I think the key thing, this is Ian, I think the key thing there is that the examples have actually been implemented and are generally seen as being successful.
Right. Yeah, gotcha.
Not just something on paper.
Yeah, sure.
In terms of next steps for this document, Joe has some revisions to do. Will it come back to this group before it goes to flood control to groundwater?
We have another meeting scheduled next week.
So we'll come back to us next week in what we think will be final form. And then the hope is at the end of our meeting next week, we'll send it on to groundwater.
Yeah, hopefully with more than a day to look at it before we have to meet.
Because groundwater is tomorrow.
Yeah, he's trying to get us a document by the end of the week.
Correct.
So hopefully that does.
Okay. And Joe, one of the things you mentioned early on today was that there may be either case law or a case on GSA versus district authorities. Did I mishear you on that?
A little bit not. It's funny because I had this internal debate for several years after Sigma was adopted. What is it to be a GSA and what is it to be the district? When you form a GSA as a joint powers authority of several districts, that's clear in my mind. Okay, that's a GSA. That's an entity and it's a GSA. When you're the district and you also elect to be the GSA, as I said before, there's kind of this metaphysical question of like, well, what is it to be a GSA? Because that's not, you don't go through LAFCO, right? You don't go through LAFCO to form a whole new district or a new public agency, a new city. You're not doing that. So what exactly is this? You're just a district, you're a public agency, and you elect to serve as the GSA. And so, I just always kind of got tied up in my own mind, like, what is it to be a GSA? And then, not exactly on this issue, but there was a case that came down a few years ago where there was a fight over territory between two GSAs and who wins that fight when they both want to cover certain land. And the court, in going through that, had a nice little discussion about what it is to be a GSA. And so that's what I was referring to. I'll pull that up and give it to Stephanie, and she can send it out. I'm not saying that it's going to answer your exact, whatever your question is. I'm just saying, once I read it, I'm like, oh, okay, provide some clarity. And that's why courts do what they do, provide some clarity on what it is to be a GSA. It was just maybe dicta even, but it was just a court kind of going through, what is it to be a GSA?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Joe, for that. I think the issue here is that our district has authority over the entire county, and a GSA has no authority outside the boundaries of the sub-basins. Is that correct?
It really has to manage on a sub-basin by sub-basin basis. So yeah, so it's like when a county steps,
Thank you.
This is Ian June. What are the implications, legal or otherwise, for having this document use MTs and MOs that are not the same as the MTs and MOs in the GSP?
They should be. When I think what we're trying to say here is we're referring to the MOs and the MTs that the GSP has developed or will be developing or whatever. But I don't believe that we're trying to come up with separate MOs and MTs apart from what the GSA is doing in the GSP.
And I was looking for it, but I thought it indicated they didn't have to be the same. And we've talked about that.
That might be like the trigger criteria. Sorry to interrupt that. That might be I'll go back and do the same. That might be the trigger criteria, because that doesn't have to be. That's the early warning system, so to speak. That, I think there's a reference there that it doesn't have to be the same as the MO and the MTs. It's the early warning system is exactly that before you get, say, to the MT.
Yeah, there may need to be some language work there.
Okay.
Stephanie,
one thing I want to make clear, as you all are looking at this, you know, I really appreciate the multiple sets of eyes on this stuff, because, again, you put it together and, you know, you wake up 2 years later and you look at the document and jumps right out at you. Wait a minute, that's wrong. So it's great to have multiple sets of eyes on this to flesh those things out and spot them.
Thanks, Joe. Liz, do you have a
question? Yes, I have a very quick just comment that, about Brendan's email comment about getting the definitions and terminology section. When we were talking about sustainable yield versus safe yield, from what I read, SGMA has a definition of what sustainable yield is, that they, I guess, have defined it as such. And would we want to be using that? Safe yield apparently has been around for decades, and it's not exactly, they don't mean the same thing. So is that something that we want to discuss, or should we just let Joe run with it and then we'll talk about it?
I thought we went with sustainable yield, but you're right, we didn't really get into it.
Okay. But well, in the definitions, I guess it'll just come out. That'll be how SGMA defines it.
Yeah, that's what my intent would be, because this is a SGMA-related document.
Great, thank you.
All right. It is top of the hour, so we have to, Joe has to hop off. But I think, again, like, thanks so much for all of the feedback. And Joe, if anyone has any final language edits that you want to make sure is in the near final draft, Joe, when is kind of a pencils down moment for you? Is that end of day tomorrow and Thursday? What's workable for you though?
Yeah, why don't we say noon on Thursday? I'm going to go back and I'll, you know, the noon on Thursday is the answer. the notes, Stephanie, that you forwarded to me, the link that Zoom does, that was insanely helpful. I love that stuff. Made this a heck of a lot easier because it, summarized everything and made this conversation go a lot better for me because I can focus on talking as opposed to jotting things down. So if you could forward that to me in the meantime, I can actually get going on some of this, and that way I can then just refine it with follow-up comments.
Perfect. So substantive stuff, I'll work with Joe to make sure he gets the this discussion as soon as possible. The ultimate pencils down is 12 p.m. on Thursday, but if folks can get their stuff in before then, again, the quicker that you get this to Joe, the quicker that he can get this turned around, the more advanced time that you would have before our meeting on Tuesday. So if there's an incentive there. Get your I would really ask folks to get their edits in by end of day tomorrow. All right. All right, that was a great one. Thanks so much for staying on a couple minutes longer, Joe, but thank you for all the hard work and quick turnarounds.
Cool. All right. Good to see everybody.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for being very flexible on that one. Very working within those tight time parameters. All right. So, kind of following up, I created a list of some of the kind of follow-up topics that this group identified during that. There was some of the things this group can work on. Some of these things can be kind of tasked out to staff and CBI tribe's participation, how we want describing that. The public comment, tracking that process, tracking public comment, what does that process really look like? The trading system, trading that commitment, annual review, the 8.2 timeline piece, which is actually this next topic. And then Joe asked was if there are any items in Appendix A that you want to bring back into the main framework document. That's one of the pieces that he's looking for from this folks. And then we identified some flag. We flagged that we were looking to Joe to give some case examples of things like transfers, maybe some insight on GSA versus district, and then the terms and glossary. So did I catch all the follow-up topics? Did I miss anything? That's good. And then, yeah, this is awesome. So in addition to that, I just want to flag that there were some things that from our April 1st meeting that are is part of this working list of things for this group to talk about. And we've already have identified like the sustainable yield. Let's look back and kind of figure that one out. We'll get into the management. Zone spatial implementation units. We tried to come down with fewer terms. We ended up with more terms. So just that piece. Credit trading. So essentially, they mentioned, inventory charge should be treated differently than allocation. I already mentioned public comments. We mentioned case examples. There was discussion about, if you consider if for new pumpers, like if that changes, and then wanted to look back on ramping, what does it look like to ramp towards achieving sustainable yield? So all, not saying that like, we're talking about this today, but flagging that this is the list of things still need future discussions. We wanted to make sure that things weren't falling through the cracks as we're trying to simplify and condense Appendix A. We don't want things to be falling through the cracks.
Well, one of the things that we don't, and I, this is probably for Justin, I just want some clarity, but we talk about an appeals process, right? And, but we, well, we mention it, but we've never really talked about it. And you have, and I could be wrong, but I think in your most recent resolution that you put out there for fees, you had an appeal process there, didn't you? Or,
Yep.
and I'm just thinking that, I'm not sure, this might be a place to be able to at least read that, review it, especially if it's something comparable that we're going to see for this program.
I haven't spent any time with it, but I'm just thinking that, you know, maybe this is a good time to look at it.
And maybe we do that
working group
post approval of this as we start to get the more details later in the program, right? So it's one of those things we say, hey, we're going to get through this document and get it out to the board approved. And then here's the things we're going to work on later. Because it doesn't actually say that an appeal process is going to be built into this document because there's nothing yet to appeal, right? Because ultimately, we're going to appeal things that we decide later and we should decide how to appeal them then. But I agree with you. Right, that we should review existing appeal processes.
We haven't really had, even as a commission, we haven't really looked at or spending time on it.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I suppose the question is, you know, to me, the conversation related to the document, you know, the board is sort of finished for today. Everybody agrees, Joe's got his thing to do. I believe this meeting was booked for another hour. Do we want to get into some of this now? When we keep talking about things.
I'll post this to the group. I mean, you all decide how you want to spend the time. One of the things that we noticed that Joe mentioned in that section 8.2, I think, the timeline, he had identified these categories, these milestone categories. What we hadn't done, which was in Appendix A, were specific dates, committing to certain dates and deadlines. So one of the questions for this group is, do you want to assign some deadlines for this?
A timeline to be included in the document to go to the board?
Mm-hmm. That was in the original Appendix A, had some of these. So some of the questions like, are these the right milestones? Do you want to add these? Does the sequencing look about right? So whatever, if this group decides, yes, you want to add some deadlines to this, then staff, me, and LSE, we can start mulling over, okay, what does this kind of look like? Can we come up with some basic timelines?
How long does it take to get the information, for example, right? And we can come back and give you a report on, if we want to go down this road, right, then we can say, hey, how long would it take to get a piece of information or data together or what's available now, what could be available in the near future, to make this happen, and then we can start making some calls about giving ourselves some deadlines. And I just the thing that I would say about this, and I know we've talked about it in the past, right? That deadlines, when we give ourselves these goals, I think they look good to the people that are going to approve it by us committing to doing it within an amount of time. As far as there is nothing there.
We've given ourselves a lot of wiggle room with some of the language. And so I think we do need to at some point kind of nail down some of our time or our intentions in with respect to these.
Yeah. Well, I think that's right. I mean, the reality is this group will be doing a pick and shovel work, so it would behoove us to develop a timeline we think is realistic. In the absence of us providing the timeline, I think we may have a timeline imposed upon us by those who don't understand the complexity. So it would make sense to have a recommended timeline, I think.
So should we revisit Appendix A to review those and then say, okay, these are the ones we can, they're not in front of me and I don't have them offhand, off the top of my head. Is it something we want to do today? Or is it just
Well, I think if we're all in this group agreeing that that is something we do want to do, then let me get the timeframes to get potential timeframes together from the consultant to get the data. Because ultimately it's going to rely a lot about, you know, hey,
yeah, but
can we get this in an amount of time?
I've got the red line of folks and somehow agree
through the process. But it's like Bill mentioned, or somebody mentioned last time, you know, we could wait forever for data, and it's always hopefully going to continue to improve.
Yes.
But at some point, we go with what we have.
That's fine, but we started draft here today and just considering if that's realistic or not.
Because what could be helpful for this group is identifying like a bit of a sequencing of are these the right things to take in the sequence to kind of inform the timeline, and are there any kind of we need to know later than X year.
So on the red line document, the 2026 administrative fee, is that in our purview or is that something we should just leave out?
It's already happening that way, but yes, it's not.
That one's a non-issue, partial credit allocations.
out there yet. The first one is going to be determination of management.
I think you have to do that. The priority in the management zone, the management, whatever you want to call them, the special zones needs to be done.
Special areas.
Going further back from that even is, you know, we've been struggling with this whole polygon issue with respect to boundaries of subdivisions. So I think we need to kind of lean on Eddie a little bit to refine that a little better. Or at least to talk about it.
Just that way I already started that.
Okay.
Because I 100% agree with you. I kind of wanted to see if we can get ahead of something. Like, what can we do? You know, what are realistic options?
Yeah.
You know, what data is out there? What data could be achieved to maybe do this? Yeah. So that we can, it'll help inform us moving forward about
just what ask us to redraw the boundaries based on watersheds to start with, just so we can see what that looks like.
You can have it, but I already confirmed this with him too, that there isn't a lot of data that supports watersheds being necessarily tied to a hydrological condition specific.
They're better than a polygon.
I'm not arguing one way or the other. I'm just talking about how this went. Right.
I think the target resolution also needs to be down to the parcel level. That it may be iterative. But one of the things that's gotten people really cranked up about the polygons is uncertainty as far as the actual boundary and how it affects individual parcels. And that's going to be key. That, again, it may be an iterative process and probably will be, but the target resolution needs to be down to the parcel level. So this guy can look here, I'm in it or I'm out of it. As far as public acceptance, that's going to be really important. I think that, implementing phase one and doing the CE planning can happen simultaneously. I think we need to, identify these special zones or management areas and why that's a special zone and management area. And then we need, after that, to revise or verify the MOs and MTs that are, so it's technically sound and consistent. And if we get through that, that'll be a really good start. That's my opinion.
So phase one and CE plans at 2026 item, right?
Yeah, where's our red line then? Where's the appendix A?
Finalizing spatial areas is probably a 2027 task. And from spatial areas, to your point, you know, whether you call it sustainable yield or MOMT, it's sort of part and parcel of the same process.
Justin?
Yes?
What's the availability of Blue Earth County meat during this period?
It depends on what we pass for fees. It's a budget thing, right? So it costs money. It depends on what we pass for fees. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming we are going to pass a fee. I think that we can say that is highly likely that is going to happen. And if, in fact, we do pass a fee that includes the PMA-based stuff, one or the other option, then there is money built into that budget for LUDOL to provide us this data. So,
Wait a minute. Now, under admin, we had the secret compliance budget item. We couldn't use some of that resource for this effort.
For CEQA? No.
No, not CEQA, no, Sigma.
Oh, no. Sigma compliance. There will be data improvements over time and that are normal part of that record. But that doesn't include them coming in here and giving presentations or specific data reviews associated with that. There is no contract for that within the administrative fee. We built that into the PMA part to support the development of these actions.
It's just that $400K. Yeah. I mean, to me, I don't want to get into the minutiae of the fees, but $400K is a lot of money that we're generating every year. And, you know, to think that we're going to need $2 million for a 5-year review doesn't, you know, shake out to me.
We can have, if we really need to, we can have LSE explain that, why that is. But I will give you this bit of this.
Yeah.
It is not just like a review of a document and an update. We're talking about full modeling parameters, redoing the entire model on a 5-year program, right? And creating the assumptions from that model that lead to how we might change a GSP and make a revision. And that is a huge task. It costs more than that to do it the first time, the $2 million. And so ultimately, that's why it looks like that in there. Because we've already done this, where we've done all the modeling and made these assumptions and brought forward that information to create our GSPs. And now, in a 5-year track, we see that we may have to do that again. When we talk about things like effective MOs and MTs, right, you need to review the modeling and use those assumptions to inform how that might change over time. And ultimately, that's an expensive task. So it may not happen in perpetuity every 5 years, but in this first cycle, it's definitely going to have to. Because there's two different types of modeling sort of discussed, and that sort of initial one, which is qualitative, and then the second round, which is more quantitative. Does that make some sense? So we're modeling on this sort of, here's what this whole thing kind of looks like, right? And then the second round of modeling is much more detailed of, here's this some more specifics about each of these different types of areas and their conditions, what's available within them, et cetera, et cetera.
So a comment with respect to modeling and assumptions as part of the annual review, I mean, whatever happened to just looking at the data or with respect to groundwater levels, period. I mean, that's the metric by which our success or failure is being judged here. From what I think I heard from Eddie the other night at one of the public meetings, he indicated that automation is underway having to send someone out to capture the data at the well site, except but once or twice a year.
We are working on that.
So how close are we to that? Is it going to be implemented this year?
2026?
Yeah.
I say there's a fairly decent likelihood, as long as some of the wells I still need to gain access to,
mm-hmm.
because there weren't ours.
I mean, that's kind of key to any annual report, is to see where we're at.
Yep.
And, you know, you can model and assume until you're blue in the face, but really when it comes down to it, it's about the water levels.
Well, you know, the guys down south side
are part of the city with them.
Sustainable consultants, revenue assurance.
Right, right. I mean, why spend the money on a model that we already admit isn't really, it's whatever we got right now, but it's not reflective of the actual conditions out there.
I would present that, or at least the idea that in the future, when we get this thing, when we're comfortable that the model is more quantitative and we're kind of there with that quantitative modeling, that we should be able to internally do annual reports and GSP updates over time. And then that will really change how that works. We're not there quite yet, in my opinion, but I think that ultimately that should be a goal. And then ultimately that will reduce the functional cost of doing this stuff over time too, hopefully.
And your point, Mike, was there's the $400,000 already proposed. Give us enough money to pay for that. We could, but
well, it's never been justified. And I looked at that as potentially a vehicle for moving some of this forward.
Yep.
So where are we now on our red light timeline? Are we still working on this?
So
are we going to try and get those dates down today?
Yeah, ultimately, or at least, you know, confirm an order, right? Let's say, hey, let's go through this one, then this one, then this one, then this one. I think we're all in agreement that phase one and CE is a 2026 thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we're all there.
So we're on milestone categories on the blue list right now.
Yeah, these are...
Okay. You have ability to edit that?
Yeah.
Stephanie?
Yeah.
Can you put a date after those for us?
And this is when we're aiming to get them at a good enough resolved stage, not that we don't talk about them until 2027.
What's the technical foundation reference to?
Ultimately, technical foundation is going to be related to both spatial methodology and yield trigger methodology. So
okay.
We're kind of going to have to, that's part of that is that modeling idea, right?
Both of those are related to modeling.
Yes.
Okay.
really the next two, the yield treatment and the
spatial and then yield.
You know, what I'd like to do is make trigger separate. You know, yield is one thing. Yield is, but trigger is actually policy.
Migrated. Yields are calculated.
Yeah. It's a methodology versus policy. Yeah.
Yeah. Ultimately, hopefully, we're creating a yield that is based on a mathematical equation. And hopefully, we're setting triggers based on what the policy states we do. I would agree with that.
Yeah, so we're creating, we're reviewing data and methodology in 2027. We're talking about a trigger methodology in 2028.
Good. That works. Definitely like that.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
That's that pushing. I think triggers can be defined sooner than spatial methodology.
I think we can have
it. It should be a 27 at least.
Well, trigger, even we can discuss it this year. I mean, it's really just a policy. I mean, to me, a trigger, an example of a trigger would be we have exceeded undesirable results in the Corning subbasin. Trigger. I don't think the triggers get more apparent than that. So that's that. I mean, I think it's policy. I just don't think it's a big push, big, you know, for us to do that.
Like, well, you could also do it on two levels, right? Where you could say triggers for review until 2032, and then triggers in 2032 for action in the second phases, because that's kind of two different definitions, right? So ultimately, we're saying within this program, hey, if something happens, we want to review it before the 2032 in case we need to take action.
I actually don't think you have a choice. I mean, if you get your undesirable results,
you're going to get the question in an annual report.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen right away.
Yes, and you're going to have to respond to it. It's forced anyway, but yes.
So am I hearing that there's already enough information and ideas to have this trigger methodology, you know, early on? It's not as there's a lot of information needs that we need to work with LSE on the spatial methodology, the technical foundation, et cetera. But we've already kind of heard some different ideas for triggers, like the slope, heading towards the slope of the NT and the undesirable results, things like that. So am I hearing that accurately from the group?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand what that looks like. So the absence of telling a landowner what his pumping allocation is, how do you tell him to pump less?
So ultimately, when we're talking about triggers, right, if think about it this way, we aren't going to do anything unless the condition says we should.
Well, I understand
that. And the trigger is the definition of what that condition is, and then it creates an allocation, per se.
Yeah, but what I'm going to do is the or what, right? So, yeah, okay, we can say, yep, we triggered a problem, we're at an M&T or whatever, right? But until we have a program that says or what, this is meaningless. So we have a meeting that says...
And that's why I say that's the phase two style trigger, right? Because you're right. What are you going to do to set a trigger for nothing?
Right. I mean, picture this, right? Oh, Corning's in a problem. Everybody pump less. Or what?
Or what? Yeah. If there is no consequence, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, I think,
and that's why I say one of them's trigger for review, right? Hey, something's happening, and we need to look at this deeper, right? Yeah. Not an or what. The second one is a trigger for action. That is a defined action.
But how do you take an action until you define what your phase two action plan is?
That's true. Yeah. So they're totally separated, and they can't be intertwined. And I 100% agree.
So why don't we, you know, on this phase two consideration, you know, let's make that a focus in 2026. You know, I mean, we may not define what phase two is and the triggers and, you know, our approach, our response, et cetera, but we might. And I think this is really the most probably, I mean, we have obviously spatial triggers, you know, the yield calc all feed into phase two consideration. Okay. And that and the spatial methodology and yield cap, that's for others to do. And we're not going to figure that out. We're not going to do it. Okay. We'll certainly review it and give our opinions to it. So that's really Ludor Scalmi, you know, I'm assuming, is going to fix that piece of it. So that's out of our hands, other than this is what we need, this is what we want. But phase two consideration is, I think, is policy, you know, and I think it's something the working group can sink its teeth into. And you know, we have issues, we do have disagreements in this doc related to phase two.
Yeah.
This is the opportunity to work it out. So let's make that, you know, so I think it right
or time process sooner than later. I agree with that.
I love the idea of sort of separating this idea of, hey, we're going to work on policy stuff, and then let's let the technical minds come up with methodologies that we can make comments to.
That's right.
But that's what they do. Yep. Just like with Joe, right? We're saying, hey, let's let the technical mind draft this thing up, mm-hmm. and we can make comments to it, and we can go that way. But when it comes to policy, real policy, that's the stuff that we should have influence on, because that's the stuff that gets voted on by those above you that you're going to recommend to.
All right, so let's make 2026, you know, our one of our primary tasks be phase one and phase two considerations. We're going to basically build a program.
Or policy developments or something. I mean, that's what we can figure out. I keep coming back to the builder Ian said, I mean, this has got to be something you can explain to a landowner in minutes or less.
Yeah.
You're in this zone, you have this allocation. If you pump more than that, this will happen.
And we ought to be able to set up something like, say, example, a web page where someone can literally just put in their address and it'll kick back a piece of data about 100%. Where they are. It's just a number.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that should, I agree wholeheartedly that that should happen.
Also, the triggers or the why needs to be something you can measure from the water levels. Yeah. And the modeling's great as a planning tool, but early on, and this is a, you know, 10 whatever, it's worth 100 attaboys. I had experiences looking at some of the model results, and I don't trust it. I trust measured water levels. So it needs, and the average guy out there, that's what he's going to care about,
yeah,
right? Because that's what causes wells to go dry, et cetera, and so on. Whether it's a trend towards a properly set MT, which, that Stanislaus proposal, I think they looked at 4 years, and the linear trend was it's going to hit an MT, then, you know, that was a problem.
But just now,
it didn't hit the MT, but it was trending that way to make some adjustments.
It gives you time to sway that slower.
But for people to accept it, you gotta know what areas you're talking about down to the parcel level. And you got to look at something you can measure that's real. And all the other stuff is great for planning and coming up with possible mitigation measures or whatever. But ultimately, it's what you can measure. That's what we care about is groundwater levels.
Well, I think to the point that the sooner we start talking policy, the better. Because if we can develop what the rules are, the sooner people understand the rules, they can understand their options, right? So if people know, okay, I'm going to be short, so I better plan on taking out 100 acres so I can concentrate that water on 300 good acres. And if you know that that's an option, you can plan for it.
Yes, if it's...
That's a credit. I use that
for tackling down south from what I'm reading.
100%. Yeah.
Hey, in 5 years, this is coming. In 4 years, this is coming. Hey, in 3 years, this is coming. And people can... pre-plan. I think that's important too.
Yeah, and now, you know, in 2028, that 100 acres are coming out. You know, and then 2030, well, you know, we're another 50 you might need to come out. They can plan.
I think we have a good sense for what we're going to take on first. One question I had was for the topic of water treating. Where does that kind of fit into the sequence?
That's phase two.
Yeah, it's part of the phase two conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we don't need to trade water before then.
No, because there is no allocation.
There's no allocation to trade
water. And I think to Hal's point about this idea that, hey, you're going to have something built into there, I think everybody in this room to some extent is saying, hey, something's going to have to happen with that. Maybe it's within your own blocks. Maybe it's within a specific area. Yeah. Maybe it's within a whole basin. We don't know that yet. But I think, to your point, we have to come up with some methodology to which farmers can farm.
Oh, otherwise,
I mean, otherwise, it's garbage.
I mean, you need to plan, wipes that zone out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No reason. Then no one's going to farm. Yeah, that actually just makes it not farmable or farmable with something that's not nothing like that.
We're certainly going to reconsider how we're farming.
Yeah.
Where we're farming, how we're farming.
And by the way, you're right. You could come up with places where you say, hey, you know what, in this area, because conditions so bad, you can't even drain. It's just an allocation. That might be true.
Yep.
But ultimately.
And you're going to find, I think, pushback from, you know, say we don't develop these management areas and we treat the Corning sub-basin in its entirety with respect to allocations. You're going to have people along the river say, what am I getting cut back for when we don't have a problem here? And so you're going to get pushback that way unless we're able to break these sub-basins up into more manageable areas that are meaningful with respect to groundwater conditions.
Well, in common sense stuff, to Ian's point, like, you know, if the area is set up in a common sense way, people are going to look and say, yep, well, the level's dropping. Something's got to happen, right? Versus you're sitting on the river and somebody's telling you you got a 2-acre yield. You're just looking at what?
Just know that no matter how you divide that, and I agree with everything you've said, not rebuking them, but there's always going to be a boundary, and whoever's on that boundary is going to.
Yeah, right.
That's all.
Yeah,
right. Just remember that because it sounds simple. We need to make them align with hydrological unit.
On that line.
Don't go to a line
Let's push it and get it that way.
It's going to be tough. It's more defensible, though, to your point. That's the only way you can do it. That happens in everywhere in the state, so it's got to be done, but it's definitely better than arbitrary.
Yeah, there's a concession to be made regardless in the end. Yeah,
sure. Can I comment with respect to the public meetings that you just conducted?
Yes.
I mean, it's maybe not part of what we're doing here, but it does relate because, you know, I was at both of them. And I think there's a better way of presenting what you did, particularly when it came to the four option slide.
Please.
I saw it twice and I was both times. It's hard. I understand it. But for the average Joe sitting in that room, it was they didn't even know what you're talking about.
Did my piece?
The options with respect to the two options under a PMA and the two options under administrative fees.
Oh, yeah.
And those permutations of how this could go. Yeah.
One of these two
at a flow chart might be more appropriate where it actually starts from the top down. And to the point is, one of the points was, that though the PMAs are only applicable in overdraft areas, and that's in under, you know, for not every sub basin, and that was lost on most people.
Yeah,
really, they didn't know that. If you go up on another slide, it was in a little red box, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was kind of like you had to squint to even see it, and it wasn't really made clear. And so, yeah, a lot of people that were asking silly questions that were answered in your detail, but it just wasn't presentable to the extent where they could pick it up. As to Ian's point, it has to be clearly understandable from the onset when they get tied up in trying to figure out where they're at and what, you know, what are these options.
Yeah.
Then it takes away from your message, Justin.
As you might rethink. We spend lots and lots of time going over this. Hey, is this understandable?
We are in a different area.
So this is important feedback for us to say, hey, this happened. And by the way, I'm actually hearing it because people are calling me about it. They're saying, hey, what does this actually mean?
Right.
And then when I talk them through it, they're like, oh, never mind. I got it. Okay, I got it.
So, Steve, let me just make sure I'm capturing that. The suggestion is to kind of turn this into more of a flow chart.
That works better for me. Everybody's different. But actually, the just general term would be a more understandable methodology to explain it to people that does, you know, that's it's more intuitive than that is.
Examples.
One of the things that I had a problem with is that, and it's relates to what Steve was saying, is that, you know, a lot of the, you know, the public, that we're trying to reach don't care, in my mind, how we got there.
No.
Okay. They don't care that we have all these options. They want to know, what's this going to cost me and why? And if I have a problem with that, you can tell me, we looked at all these other things. This we determined to be the best option. I think that is where most people are at. You know, it's they're not going to get into this minutia. They don't know what a PMA is. They don't know where our overdrafted basins are.
And they don't want to reset it. They don't want to reset it.
Oh,
they don't want
No, no, no. Yeah, they don't. You know, right. So I think I mean, but it depends on who you're trying to reach.
Yep.
And I think, you know, we, in these two instances, where we're trying to reach the general public, and they're just not ready for this.
I know that Stephanie can attest to this because I say this all the time, and I've been saying this to consultants. We need the number.
Yeah.
Give me the damn number so I can start telling people the number is. Because that's the most important thing to everybody's right. mind. What is the damn number? And so, and they, by the way, I think we're there, right? I think the numbers that we are presenting in this meeting are going to be accurate enough for people to estimate what their cost is going to be. And so ultimately, that's the key. And now when people call me, I will give them an example. Hey, what are you actually farming? Tell me. Here's that calculation. And this is going to be really close to what it's going to be.
And that's what they'll listen to.
And they hear that well.
Yeah.
The total number.
The number. Yeah.
The total.
The total number. The one.
Or this guy into it's like, okay, well, you add this and this is administrative. Yep. And
mm-hmm. you know, I ask them where they're farming and I say, okay, in that area, this is going to be your fee. That's what it looks like.
For
the whole thing.
Yep. You could absolutely say this is a base administrative fee that's applicable
everywhere
across every sub basin. And in those sub basins where we've got issues, then we're looking
at going to add another V on that.
There's PMAs. And that's going to assure 80% of the people that, okay, here's our base fee. And that's even for growers that are pumpers. We're going to say, well, okay, we got a base fee, but we don't have a per acre foot fee on top of it. Unless you're in Corning or Red Bluff.
Unless you're in Corning or Ribble or Los Molinos.
Well, maybe Los Molinos
too. Yeah.
But that's, again, remains to be seen.
And well, hopefully that's short lived.
You're looking at Prop 218, right?
So here is what I'm going to tell you the fee attorney is telling me. And by the way, people can hear this, but I don't, what the ultimate outcome is going to be what the ultimate outcome is. They are telling me this is a Prop 26 fee. All fees associated with doing regulatory activity for groundwater is a Prop 26 fee because it's a regulatory action. However, they are recommending that we do the voting process like a 218 process because there's a reference to a little snippet of 218 within the water code. And that way you are technically compliant with both. 216 has a set of requirements, 218 has a set of requirements, and we can be in compliance with both by doing 26 plus this little voting bit out of 218. And then you end up with a fee that is compliant regardless. Does that make some sense? And I know that that's funky and I know that that's weird, but apparently from the outcome of how things are going in courts, that's how we got to kind of do this thing.
So it's a shall not exceed Prop 218 like presentation to voters.
Right? Bingo.
People need to vote on it.
That was the $500 cap that we talked about.
No, it's like
your match.
I mean, it can get through, right? Yeah. Corning Subbasin GSA did Prop 218, you know, shall not exceed, blah, blah.
That's right, maximum fee.
And nobody liked it, but it passed.
Yep.
So it can be done in this area.
And that's how you pass them, right? You say, this is the maximum fee. This is the fee we recommend for this year. This is the maximum fee. This is the fee we recommend for this year. That's what people will see. So that means that it will never exceed this. This is your maximum possible exposure.
Right. One of the
but it's always going to be. I mean, do you do that annually? Because it's always going to suddenly change.
We don't vote it annually. You vote the maximum possible fee via 218, and then you set the fee annually by a board vote. And so, and that's based on budget changes. Because remember, we're talking an estimated budget right now.
Yeah.
And until we actually do it for a year, it's really impossible for me to give you super accurate numbers, right? So we got to guesstimate now, and then we're going to do this for a year, and then we can say, oh, we need to do this within that maximum fee range.
Yeah, not to exceed.
Because if we want to exceed the maximum fee, then we're going to have to go back to voters for that.
One of the concerns I heard the other night, particularly at the Corning meeting, was the concern was that these things are just going to start and continue and always ramp up. They never go down, they never go away with respect to fees. And I think at some point, because we do have a 2042 deadline, that we should supposedly be in this nirvana state of sustainability, that there's a need for this to have a sunset.
I think maybe not a total sunset, but a ramp down with respect to the administrative and the fee basis of it. That, hey, if we bring this thing back into compliance, then, you know, automatically, I guess we're getting rid of the PMA cost. Yeah. Is going to go away, but there'll always be some level of administrative cost. But what are we doing to look at ramping that back down again? Ideally, I'd love for you to be out of a job in 20 years, Justin.
Yeah.
Not vindictively, but just because then there's no need for it. And I think that deserves mention, at least in our discussions, that we don't want to do this forever.
Yeah.
We don't want to charge forever. We don't want this to be an ongoing escalating cost every year, because God knows, as growers, we've got enough of them already.
Oh, yeah, I've heard plenty of this. Yeah, and that reference right there, well, really common.
Yeah.
God damn it, this thing's eating me alive, right? And it keeps going up every single year. I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that is a really good point that we should start talking about, hey, maybe at least like, hey, kind of what this looks like potentially after it's all done.
Yeah, we know you've got a lot of work to do in the next 5 years.
There's a lot of work to do.
And that's going to take a budget to do that. Yeah. But ideally, when this thing gets to, not to autopilot, but to where we're actually...
It goes from this level of management to this level.
Yeah, and so should the fee.
Yeah. That is actually a really good point. I'm going to make a note of that, because I think that could only really help
address some concerns out there.
Yeah.
The other factor is we're listening to some of the climate predictions, right? We may be in a worse situation 10 years from now than we are now.
Could be. Yeah.
Things aren't going to go away.
That's the whole commensurate with issues notion that we're talking about all through this document. So there's flexibility that way, but I think there needs to be recognition that this thing hopefully won't continue to balloon into a bloated bureaucracy.
I think the key thing there is, you know, using the 218 process, it's you've gone to voters, this is a not to exceed fee. So it can't balloon past
beyond this
you go back to voters. That's
right. Yeah, beyond this number, it could never go high. Yeah.
Unless you go back to voters. And I mean that's important.
Yeah, it's got to.
You're always going to have the component with Sigma administrative events. That's not going to go away.
Right.
So this was really, really helpful for, we've been writing this down for the general fee Sigma implementation funding discussion. A couple of things related to the demand management that I wanted to move back, but how did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to ask what the attendance was at the 2 meetings.
About 30 each.
Yeah, ish, or something.
What was that question?
How many people attended the meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're standing up every time. Last time it was 20s, now it's 30s.
So yeah. I got a sense that a lot of them were either very small or just domestic pumpers. I didn't see it. I had maybe 2 or 3 clients at the Red Bluff meeting and same at the Corning meeting, maybe. Yeah.
I would tend to
agree. A couple of them were the same guys.
Yeah, I recognize several of the smaller mid to mid scale farmers that I see in different realms, not necessarily there, but in different realms. I think that the biggest success that I have had in giving presentations that would be seen by a lot of agricultural industry is things like Walnut Day and Elm Day and Almond Association, these sort of things. And I do go to those and I do give presentations to them. And I think I get, you know, there's a captive audience of 100 farmers there. They're going to see it. So at least there's that.
Yeah. There's still an incredible level of either misinformation or just lack of information from what I could get.
And we talked about this. There's a few folks that are willfully ignorant, right? They just don't want to take the time to be involved. And I get that. You know, that's going to always
just tell me what it's going to talk.
So maybe
just
one ask I might have for the group is that you helped us kind of identify there's a different way that we can present the 4 different options. Creating a flow chart. We've been talking about creating an update. We had a fact sheet back when there was all the options on the table. Redoing that, maybe an FAQ document. But I think one thing that would help is if folks know of any events coming up that are timely, to make sure that Justin shows up. Sorry to voluntarily you to show up to these meetings. But if there's an event that it would be really beneficial for Justin to go to without the next day, those types of events where we're getting a different type of group than what we normally get at the public meetings. That's where we're trying to diversify how we reach the folks that need to be reached.
I kind of build on the example comment. I just want to make sure talking through that, that for me, I think the flow chart's a good idea, but if you can cite a specific example, it doesn't have to be a real person, but by
this block is 70 acres. Yep. It uses, it grows this product. Here is what the total fee would be for that.
Correct. And, you know, here's a 5-acre example. Here's a 60-acre example. Here's a 500-acre example.
Well, even just multiples of 100.
You know, yep.
And 100 in the different crops. Right. 200
through different crops.
100%. And I actually do that for people on the phone. I actually give them an estimator.
You could either build an estimator if you wanted to. Put your acreage, put your crop, yep. Where you're at.
You can know roughly where you're
at. Spits out a number. Here's your estimate.
Yeah.
For planning purposes.
I think we're finally about there now.
Yeah.
Which is simple.
I think there's some concrete talk.
That's it. From the retail spreadsheet.
The goal is to have a good crowd at an educational meeting. We'll hold it a week after the text bills come out and give them
that's exactly torches and pitchforks.
They'll be in the big room over here again.
You're going to be the guest speaker, Bill, for that.
Yeah, meeting. Yeah, Bill. Come on up.
I think one of the things that we do need to think about was something you had mentioned for phase two measures. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? Because the idea of a bunch of county employees running around to a bunch of small operators is not going to work. Nowhere going to get shot. I mean, it's not going to work.
Well, and it's also too time intensive. Yeah, I mean, it would cost.
Well, but let's say that wasn't the issue. Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? You know, so a guy with 50 acres or whatever is going to, what are you going to, is he going to lose his investment? Totally.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking a hell of a lot of money. You're going to ruin a lot of people. You can't. That needs to be really thought through, and it ties into this whole trading idea with the caveats that I've commented on before. Not make conditions worse in a particular area, not exacerbate the problems during a drought.
Don't exceed the sustainable yield.
What's that?
Yeah, you can't exceed the sustainable yield for the zone.
For the zone. Yeah. So, I'm just saying. Say it again because you got to think and make it all the way through. How are you going to do this? How are you practically going to enforce whatever it is that is chosen?
Can we ask Joe for examples of where that is actually being done now? I mean, there's folks down south that are years ahead of us. They've got to be contemplating this.
It's in the water code, by the way.
It's what?
It's in the water code. It straight up says.
Well, that doesn't speak to enforcement.
What are you saying?
The water code says that exceedances get fined to a certain amount. There's a fine associated with exceedances.
Not to exceed $500.
Not to exceed $500 an acre foot. That is built right into the water code.
Yeah.
So there is a consequence that it already exists, right, that we should have certainly on our list. Right. That's there.
That's actually my next question, because we haven't assigned a date when the funding conversation, when does that need to be addressed?
Isn't that ongoing? 2026?
Yeah.
No, that's not the baseline funding. We're talking about costs associated with actual demand management practices.
With PMA.
Because like you said, obviously, there's a cost associated. If we're going to say, hey, staff is going to go confirm something, there is something built into there that's a cost to doing that. And that's something that we always need to kind of keep in our heads and manage as we move forward, is what is the cost of the activity that we are choosing to do. Right?
Yes, which is going to need to come after our phase two consideration, right?
After phase two considerations, then we can start talking about what that sort of work costs.
So I think, Stephanie, for purposes of this timeline, that's probably got to be a 27, 28. I mean, we've got to talk through what we're going to do before we figure out how we're going to charge for it.
Yeah, we better be real close on what we're doing before we do that.
Yeah. But to Ian's point on the or one, I think a quick example is useful. I mean, what you brought up is spot on. So I have a partner on a ranch up here who's also an investor down in Pistachios, down in the western white area, the belly of the beast, water product. And this guy's not a farmer, right? He's a very intelligent man, but he is a tax attorney in Palo Alto. And he's hearing all this, oh, the sky is falling, you know, what's going to happen? So and he was beside himself. I mean, there's significant investment at risk here. And no one up to that point had been able to tell him definitively or what, right? So this is a couple years ago. So we drove down there, met with the farm manager and someone from the district. And the district actually did a very good job there on site of telling us, okay, here are the rules, here are your options. And what we ended up discovering is about 4,000 acres of pistachios there in this block they're looking at. And they were able to put a plan together that they could phase out the less productive acreage over a course of time, plan for it. Their yield hit actually didn't, they didn't really take much of a yield hit, but you take your crappy stuff out first, right? And within about an hour, there was a roadmap for the next 5 years. And he drove away thinking, okay, I'm not happy about this, but there's a path forward. And I didn't just lose $300 million.
Yeah.
Right? And in the absence of some sort of a, you have to be able to answer those questions. Here are the options available for you to move forward. Then people can
be compliant.
Yeah.
To be compliant. Here are your compliant options.
So we can be clear, did it involve trading or did it involve reallocation amongst the existing 4,000 acres?
All the above. So what they were able to do is they had another block that they were actually getting ready to plant, that they made the decision that they were going to fallow, move that credit onto the existing stuff, the same stuff on the existing stuff, the less productive older acres, they were going to take out.
So was it 4,000 contiguous acres or was it different locations?
Multiple parcels across the same GSA.
Across the same management area?
Well, they might not have.
They didn't have management area.
So it's transferred within a sub-basin.
Correct. Yeah. I think it was 26 separate parcels.
Within a management area of a GSA. Right. Just to be clear, right. Now when you go south, there's GSA management areas that are freaking tiny.
Yeah.
And some that are huge.
Yeah.
And it's all over the place. It's not necessarily defined even by sub-basin.
It was Westland. So they
yeah, it's Westland's big. Yeah.
Another suggestion on your presentation is define what that district is. Talking about the whole county, or you talk, you know, the mountains, mineral, or are you talking about?
Show like a better, like
it was, color. It wasn't clear.
A color map wasn't clear. The areas or something of that nature.
Yeah,
that's a good one too.
Is this the whatever we're talking about? GSA.
I'm sure people can see their MEs, right? So so people can see it affected areas by different decisions, right? So if it's this, it's this, and it's this, it's this. So they can see it on an actual map.
Yeah. Because it's not the entire county acreage.
I think if you're clear with people, you say, right, you know, you can't take credits from the river and transfer it to Haskana, bro. Like, come on. Like, people are going to say, yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, there is going to have to be like a rule set to devise what that is. Yeah. And I think we can get there.
There's going to have to be delineations within the sub-basin.
Yeah. But ultimately, how we get there is looking very much more complicated than I thought. And I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this and talking to the consultant about it. And, you know, it's just going to be a hard nut to crack. So it's going to take us a hot minute to get there.
That's why defining the special zones or whatever you want to call them first is going to end up being critical.
Being critical.
To accept it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I already started. I have a meeting with them this afternoon. You know, I'm going down that road right now because I agree with you. It's going to be really hard. It's going to be hard to get there. What you can use to make it happen is fairly limited. And, you know, it could potentially be a huge lift to get more data for certain methodologies. So,
well, what's your gut on where it lands? I mean, based on the data that's realistically available to us, what are we going to land? What are we going to land? If you were dictator of the world.
If I was a dictator of the world, I would use. I don't want
that.
I definitely don't want to do it. If I was choosing today, I would do it on agricultural zoning. So you're zone to one or you're zone to two. And that's that line that runs right around I-5. There's a line for that Ag-1-2. Some of it's a little west I-5, some of it's just slightly east in certain places. But there's this sort of Ag-1, Ag-2 line. It's defined already within our general plan, it's specific, right? And you can say, hey, here and here.
What about Ag 3 and 4?
Yeah, that, we're talking about that. There is 3 and 4 as well. And those potentially could have their own zones as well, depending. And we just got to look at them and talk. But right now, it's the 1 to 2 line.
That's a planning.
If you guys want to look at it. And by the way, you can look at it right online.
Can we pull it right here?
Let me see where I can find it.
AG Forest Cabana.
Yeah. AG Forest Cabana. And you're right. It could be 1, 2, 3,
pretty,
4.
Yeah. Pretty much.
We're about like 4 minutes to the top of the hour, so we're now going to close it out. So can I just close out the next steps, and then we can end the meeting, and then whatever you want. Does that work?
Sure.
Okay. So Juan said the next steps, like we're trying to figure out a very clear timeline as we're moving into the April 23rd board meeting, which is a milestone. And so again, the one thing to keep in mind is that even if like the framework looks perfect from our perspective, and it's presented to the board, and the board says like this looks great, it's not a formal adoption yet because there still needs to go through a technical and a legal, the county's legal review. So. So just wanted to like help folks kind of think that what the what's going to be decided so called at the April 23rd meeting. So, you know, edits, wordsmithing edits, get those to me as soon as possible. But ideally by the end of tomorrow, we'll do it. The commission meeting meets tomorrow morning. You'll give an update on there, get feedback from the commission. Edits though on that framework document, pencil it down no later than noon. Going to package whatever I have and give it to Joe so that way he can turn it around as quickly as possible. Our next meeting is for April 14th, and I think this is the 8:30 meeting, so it's showing up half an hour earlier than today. And ideally that is as near final to whatever's like very little changes ideally on that day. So that way we can have it prepared for that April 16th when the board packet is due to be sent out. The April 14th is when we're hoping to have report back on our conversations with LSCE of information and have mapped things out a bit for folks. So that is the game plan for the next 2 weeks. About so. Any questions?
And that 14th meeting is here again, right? 8:30?
Yes.
Okay.
That works for folks.
Are your slides posted?
So
this one, well, wait, not this version.
So the 14th is, what does that work plan entail?
We're going to figure that one out. You gave us some of, you gave us some number dates to work with and some steps to work with. And now our question is to go with the LLCEs to really tease out a better understanding of like what information might be available to us that will inform these guys. So, yeah.
Is that going to be available?
Is what
it could be available? What is available? When you might need to get it? Is that
no,
yeah, different question. These slides get posted.
Oh yeah, yeah. Got it. Now I know what you're saying. So do you guys want to look? Are we done?
Yes. So thanks. For, I think there are a couple of folks who are calling in to listen in. So thank you for calling in today. And well, the next meeting again is April 14th at 8:30 a.m.